Backseat Book Club, Book 3, The Hogfather. Hi, this is Brandon Sanderson, author of Mistborn and the Wheel of Time series, among other things, and you are listening to the Backseat Book Club.
Hey, this is Lena.
This is Scott.
And I'm Sam.
And this is Backseat Book Club, episode number 3. We are going to be discussing Hogfather by Terry Pratchett. And Scott, why don't you give us a little quick rundown on what this book is about?
Well,
quick rundown.
First, I've got business.
Oh.
Because around this time, because by the time this episode drops, we will be done reading the next book, which leaves us only 2 books left. So,
yes.
We need you to suggest more books.
I already left suggestions. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, non-Sam people need to suggest books then.
What's wrong with my suggestions?
Nothing.
I'm sure they're lovely suggestions, but
I'm joking.
we need to be a little diplomatic about this.
I know. I tease.
Yes, so I'm telling you to do this now, so you get a whole month to throw names at us, and then we'll post a poll on the Goodreads group, and whatever happens will happen with that. I'm not going to say it's purely democratic, because Lena and I have to read everything, so we've got a few veto votes around. If it comes to that, I don't think anyone's going to suggest something completely awful. I guess the submission rules are it has to be fiction, has to be standalone, and I guess that's it.
And hopefully it won't suck too much.
There has to be just harder to gauge. Well, the right amount of suck results in 45 minutes of curmudgeonly podcasting.
And that is fine. That in and of itself, a little bit of suck is good. A whole bunch of suck doesn't work for a book podcast.
Nope. You have to read the whole book.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we're reading Twilight.
No. No, we aren't.
See, now you're going to make me ban you, and I love you, so I don't want to.
I know. I won't do that. I'm just, you know, I want to see Scott suffer by reading Twilight, truthfully.
Oh, speaking of getting banned, I mean, we're kind of an open door policy on who can come on. Not like all the way open, but it's a nudge. You can knock. Basically, if someone we know says you're cool, you can come on.
Pretty much.
And even then, you could kind of fake it and just send me an email and be like,
"I'm cool.
Jim says I'm cool." Okay, if Jim says you're cool.
Or if there's any particular book you know that we're doing in the future that you're really into, you want to be part of it, let us know. Gifts and cash are okay.
Yeah, bribes of all stripes. We are fond of seasonal microbrews.
Or cash for the unemployed in the group.
All right.
Nudge, nudge. I'm done begging.
Okay.
That part of the show is over now. Tell us a little about the book, Scott.
All right, so The Hogfather is a Discworld novel by Terry Pratchett in which the auditors of reality, realizing that human belief makes the universe rather messy in their minds, contracts a professional hitman to kill The Hogfather, Discworld's equivalent to Santa Claus. Death gets wind of this, realizes the implications thereof, and proceeds to take his place while nudging his granddaughter by adoption to investigate the matter more fully, and the day ends up getting saved. There is also an amusing subplot with the faculty of the Unseen University.
Okay, that probably answers. They confused me a little bit.
Okay, so those guys tend to crop up in B plots fairly often.
Uh-huh.
And basically you have the bursar, the dean, the arch-chancellor, and everyone else. The bursar and the dean have one character trait each, and everyone else is just kind of interchangeable. Like,
okay.
I'm pretty sure you could switch senior wrangler and lecturer in recent runes, and no one would really notice.
A few times I got a little confused, wondering if the faculty was the auditors, and I just didn't catch that yet.
Yeah, no, those are very different guys.
Okay, just in the way, you know, the different sections jumped around.
Yeah, well, the big clue is that the auditors don't have quotation marks when they talk.
Yeah, you're right. Didn't really think about that. But then I'm trying to remember the beginning when I can't remember who it was, they first go to the auditors to contract this job.
That's the Assassin's Guild, which is like a finishing school, but with murder.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I understand where my confusion was. I think I'm good.
Okay.
I enjoyed the book. I really did. I've never read any Terry Pratchett, never even really heard of it. I loved Death. I just thought he was cool, and I liked his attitude.
He's got a good attitude.
Not the evil monger you'd kind of think he should be.
All right, your big high level thoughts on this one, Sam?
I have always really liked Hogfather. You know, it's one of the few books that we can quote off the top of our heads sometimes. The characters are really fun. I love Susan. And Susan just gets better and better as a character. Death is awesome as Santa Claus. not what you would typically expect. Oh my god, they travel to the land of the Tooth Fairy. Who knew the Tooth Fairy had a land? And honestly, like, I appreciated, I think, the book more after I saw the TV adaptation they did of it, which I know we'll get to a lot later. But this book is just really fun. Like, you read it, you have so many giggles, and it reminds you that Terry Pratchett just knows how to put humor into motion and make you smile. So I really like this one.
All right, so this is coming from a period when Terry is at his peak. Like, his best work is with this world is around this era. And then, on top of that, the Death books are always stand out awesome. And this one stands out awesome among them. Like, this... Like, no hyperbole, this is definitely some of his best stuff right here. And I think... Yeah, you know, there's a laugh on every page, be it a really stupid pun about how, you know, Jack Frost replies to comments coldly, or, you know, gives icy glares. No real calling attention to the puns, but they're there.
I like how he basically, for the most part, only draws ferns on the windows. Occasionally paisley, which kind of looks like ferns.
But, well, he just likes ferns.
He likes ferns. Although at one point I think he drew like three dogs.
Yeah,
three puppies on the pub window.
Well, as the book goes on, it's like he's realizing he only does ferns and is now challenging himself to reach beyond ferns. Like, there's a lot there for people paying attention. And even though it is very funny, I think this one has a bit more thematic depth than some of the other ones, which we'll get to, but...
I'm going to turn on my Nook. There were a couple of things I actually highlighted. There was one quote I didn't like, just because I felt like, and I can't remember who said it, I just wrote it down in a post-it note real quick, but at one point, I think it might have been Tea Time, and I'm going to call him Tea Time. I don't care.
No, it's Taya Time, eh?
I know.
I like Tea Time better.
Thank you. You're outnumbered. I think it was him that said it, but at some point said, a little piece of shit gets in and then a pearl grows up around it. I just didn't like that phrase was used. I didn't like hearing a little piece of shit in that book. Didn't seem right. Didn't seem like it belonged. Get off my nook.
It's funny because funny that you mentioned that, because I found like with the early stuff, very seldom did you see like any swears or anything.
That was really
in Terry's
only...
book. But it's funny because when you read a lot of the later stuff, he gets a lot more crass.
Oh, okay.
When you get to a lot of the later books, especially like anything with Moist is always really crass.
Yeah, the guy's name is Moist.
Yeah, that alone should tell you something.
No, he's a con man, so he's slippery. His name is Moist.
Yeah, I think I'm Moist in another way. Yeah, my brain went there.
Moist. But yeah, I guess you brought up Teya Taime, who is a new character. Most of the people around here are fairly established, and then you get Teya Taime, who... There's very seldom you have, like, a really outright villain in Discworld, but when Terry writes one, he tends to go all out. So he's kind of, like, he's a sociopath, but not exactly, like, your ravenous, bloodthirsty kind. He doesn't process morals the way other people do.
Or at all. He's a very clever man, and he knows it, and that's really it. What he wants to do is the right thing because he wants to do it.
Cheeky bastard.
And you have his crew of miscreants.
Yes. And
Medium Dave, Chicken Wire.
What's the guy's name? I'm trying to have the dumb one. Medium Dave's brother.
Banjo.
Okay, I'm like, Bongo? What the? I could not remember his name. I liked him. He was sweet. I actually highlighted a few things, although my Nook is not going to cooperate with me. I liked Death of Rats.
Oh, Death of Rats.
He was the cutest freaking little thing I've ever seen. Oh my God, when he first started, I think the first thing I highlighted in the book was when he entered the story and then started squeaking. I'm like, oh, highlight. I love him.
Well, I love Death of Rats Origins was in the last big Death adventure, and, you know, where a bunch of lesser deaths had been slowly reabsorbing back into the main one, and then there's Death of Rats at the end of the line, it's like, no, you can stay and help. He rides around on a raven, who's mostly in it for eyeballs.
Now, what was the raven trying to do when he stole the red wrapping paper and the ribbon? What was he trying to disguise himself as? Because I never quite got that.
A robin, because he was going on about robins the whole book.
Okay.
Smarmy bastards.
I liked him. He was a nice little character as well.
Okay. So then we get to the faculty of the Unseen University where... And I just gotta say, I love Ponder Stibbins and the high-energy magic building guys.
They are crazy. Oh my goodness. I love, just in general, the Unseen Academicals. I love how incredibly quirky they are. And the more you learn about the characters that revolve around them, the more fun they tend to be. Especially in some of the later novels. But in this particular one, you kind of have to love kind of useless they are and how they think they're helpers. Oh, so it was cute.
I did like that. I think I'd need to read it a second time to really get into them a lot. Because at one point, as I said earlier, I was a little confused as to whether they were the auditors or maybe they were really the assassins. And So I didn't completely get into them. Although I did like the whole bathroom scene.
Oh, yes.
With the shower.
Oh, bloody stupid Johnson.
That was cute.
Yes. We also get Bilious, and part of killing the Hogfather is that there's conservation of belief.
So when people stop
believing in the Hogfather, random things that people kind of believe in come into existence spontaneously. So, like... The gnome that leaves warts on your feet is now a thing.
The monster that eats socks.
The sock-eating monster. And then there's Bilious, the oh god of hangovers.
I liked that one too. That was a good character. I liked when they gave him the was it the woo woo sauce?
The wow wow sauce.
The wow wow sauce. And then all of a sudden the other god got sick.
Yes. I'm sort of surprised they went with wow wow.
The god of like, one.
Yeah, wow wow sauce is kind of an old joke that came back, I think, from a different book. I'm also surprised he didn't allude to a later joke from the next book with Clatchy and Coffee. Which makes you so sober you come out drunk again.
I'm trying to think of what else.
Well, and then I guess we get to Susan. Would you like to talk about Susan, Sam?
Susan's adorable.
I like her.
I like her style as a governess, because that's what she's doing at the start of the book. She's a respectable lady type job, which is, you know, minding things, and she makes a point of discouraging anything that could pass for Mary Poppins in her life.
But you know that there's something from the get-go when they first introduce Susan, you know that there's something about her life, and I think they kind of lead you to believe that she is from the most upper crustian of families. Well, that's the way it read to me when they first introduced Susan.
Well, yeah, she is a duchess.
She's also bad freaking ass.
Yes. Taking out monsters with a poker.
Not to mention, I mean, she kills the villain. One of the only villains of Discworld.
I love the fact that she can conjure up Death's voice and use it when she needs it. Doesn't like to do it too much, but I like that she can conjure the voice.
Yeah. Yes, and I do like the kids she's watching out for, where one of them is hopelessly trying to be very twee. She's being intentionally cute and lisping. And
I was going to say, is twee like squee? And I guess it is.
Yes.
The little girl?
Yes.
Twyla. And yes, I like how Susan has to constantly correct her to use the correct words.
Well, and then it's like, and stop that. Children don't go hoppity-skip unless they're on drugs.
That was my favorite line of the book.
This book does kind of harp on a lot of sort of Victorian children's literature, more so than anything else I think Pratchett has written.
I like how, you know, as children, and this is something that, you know, kind of not just in this book, but children can see things that adults can't. And, you know, they see the monsters, but because of what Susan does, these kids are so nonplussed about seeing monsters. They'll be afraid, but, you know, they'll go to Susan because it's like, Susan, kick his ass, please. We'll just stand here and watch.
Yes. And then we also have all the various different Christmas parodies that Terry just savages, which I loved the bit with Miracle on 34th Street where it's like, the children aren't believing enough. Mall appearance.
Mall, M-A-U-L.
Yes.
Because it fixes everything.
Well, it also gives us a great cameo from Nobby and Constable Visit, and Constable Visit's awesome.
He's the one that went up to him, right?
Nobby is the one who went up to Death and got the crossbow. Visit is the sort of staunch right-wing religious guy who does not believe in all this commercialist holiday business.
He does not like it one bit.
Those two are in other books?
Nobby isn't in quite a few. Visit is only in a couple, but he's sort of a throwback to Small Gods.
He just randomly appears, usually.
Yes. Oh, okay. To remind you of your sinful heathen ways. Constable, visit the heathen with informative pamphlets.
And I liked Albert. Grumpy little, I don't know, was he a pixie or a gnome?
I think he was supposed to be a gnome.
Grumpy little drunk gnome that he was. And I liked how he was constantly attempting to be the voice of reason to Death. But
well, the unreason that is children's belief and the nature of holidays. Like, Death is fascinated by human nature, but will never truly get it, which is kind of the tragedy of his character.
Like, he was so logical about everything.
Like when he's talking to the children getting Christmas lists, it's like, and you will be good in exchange for your presents. Do we have an accord, small human?
And they're just looking at him like he's some crazy person.
Well, all the children's responses were like, it's okay. Tiny, like very tiny, tiny font. Just, this.
I know. Cute.
Gotta love how this book definitely plays on the power of belief. Just the way that, you know, everybody in the story is somehow being manipulated by something else, be it the idea of Christmas, the Hog Father. He does it in such a creative way. Like, and I don't know, I was just in giggle fits half the time. Like, even with, like, the small children, I thought that was just amazing. This is probably how I would respond, too, if Death was giving me presents. And
well, it's
me.
Not especially different from the way kids act in front of just the mall Santas, though.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah. Well, and then Death, when the little match girl was going to die and was supposed to die, and Albert kept telling him she's supposed to die, that's what happened. Things happen. Sometimes little children die on Hogs
Watch Eve.
Hogs Watch. I keep wanting to call it Hogs Night, but I knew that's wrong. Yeah. And he just was like, no, there's no reason for it. I can fix this. She doesn't have to die. She's not going to die. Dum 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 dum. He was just like so logical and matter of fact.
Well, who's gonna stop him? He's Death.
True. And I did like at the end when he was telling Susan.
Well, first you have the big reveal of what the stakes are, and yes. That comes fairly early on, which is that if people stop believing in the Hogfather, they'll die. The sun won't come up, and you think that's kind of real. And then he's explaining it. It's like, so the sun wouldn't have come up? Nope, just a ball of flaming gas. Isn't that the same thing? Completely different.
I really loved that part. Because I know, I think if I'm Susan and I'm his granddaughter, I would smack him in the face for that. But that's where it all kind of fits in with the things that you have to believe. For, you know, for everything to be right with the world.
Yes, well, and that's the thing, is the auditors are attacking this very small belief, this very stupid, childish belief, to kind of destroy human nature so that the universe will make sense to them. And he explains that, yeah, no, the Hogfather is, you know, it's not about kids needing fantasies to escape the mundanity of life. It's kids need to believe the small stuff to get the big stuff, and then you get the, you know, take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder and sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy, and yet you act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged. And Susan says, yeah, well, you've got to believe that, or what's the point? And then it's like, that's my point. Like, the whole novel is kind of this Zen riddle with the Tooth Fairy, who is the herb boogeyman.
That was a really interesting little twist. The original boogeyman. The original Tooth Fairy boogeyman.
Yes,
I thought that was really cool.
The deepest, oldest boogeyman is now watching after kids' teeth, because you get a hold of someone's teeth, you can do terrible things to them with magic.
I know. And I also...
Like and it's great, because one of the mantras of this book is old gods do new jobs.
Yes.
And so, like, the boogeyman is this darkness and entropy and primordial chaos, and now it's like, watching the teeth.
Making sure the little ones are safe. It's all good. I liked the, and I can't remember which little god she was, the one who made all the other professors or what have you play games, because she cried when they wouldn't.
The cheerful fairy.
Yeah. And then he said something like, I've never seen someone get so soggy.
Oh. And Runes has the biggest crush on her for some reason. Or it may have been the senior wrangler. Those two guys, interchangeable.
The guy who was the machine, that confused me a little bit.
What, Hex?
Yeah, he lost me a few times.
He's a computer, made of magic.
So there was no person with that?
No, he's a computer, made of magic.
Made of magic. I don't know why, but I kept thinking that it was a computer plus a man.
Nope,
that
just
had to work in tandem.
I mean, there's Mandongo who, you know, works the pumps to get it going, but that's about it. So do you have anything else, Sam?
I'm sorry, I guess I'm kind of at a disadvantage here because I didn't have enough time to really reread this book, and like, I love it. I think it's really fun, but you know, it just goes to show you kind of how my brain works sometimes. I don't always remember the finest details. I always remember how I feel after finishing a book, but this is one where it's like, I don't remember all the small details. So I kind of wish I had reread it.
Oh, you well. Can, and then we'll record a whole new show.
No, I'm not going to obviously do that to you guys.
No, it'll be just you. We'll sleep.
Yeah, that's not happening. That's not happening. I just, the things I remember about this book, I mean, you guys have already kind of covered. Other than, I mean, like I said, I really like Taya Time. I want to call him Tea Time. Fuck Taya Time. It's Tea Time.
Thank you.
Taya Time, he's going to get you.
I don't really care.
I don't have time for Taya Tame. No,
Steve. I just like that the villains in this book, yes, there was the auditors, but, I mean, it was the Tooth Fairy. And, I mean, we always get told, like, the Tooth Fairy is generally pretty cool. Because, you know, you get money under your pillow. And in this book, it made me scared. I was scared of the Tooth Fairy for a little bit. I was not a fan. But I don't really have a lot to add, I'm afraid.
And for some reason, within the course of 15 minutes, was it Bongo? Was that his name again?
Banjo.
Banjo. Oh my god. I've had a long day. I like how sweet, innocent, stupid, lunk-headed Banjo becomes kind of the keeper of the Tooth Fairy stuff while things settle down, and how this excites him because he really is still just a little boy. In a gigantic body.
Well, who better to watch out for the teeth?
Exactly. Someone who would find joy in that, because he knows what the Tooth Fairy does. I think we've touched on just about everything.
Yes. All right. So, I guess one point I should bring up, because apparently people still don't get the clue. Yeah, the Unseen University is not a ripoff of Hogwarts.
It came first.
Although, occasionally Terry Pratchett will tell people that he did in fact go back in time, to go forward in time, to steal the idea from J.K. Rowling. How exactly his artist also travel through time, he's not totally sure. You'll have to ask him that.
I'm looking forward to reading the other book you had mentioned, Equal Rights, and I actually would, after reading that, read more of his books.
Well, there are plenty. They're a good
yes.
time sink.
They're I like,
all pretty fun.
I like the style of writing, and I think I would enjoy the rest. Unlike Fight Club.
Okay.
Enjoy the rest.
All right, so I guess because you're a neophyte to Pratchett, what did you think? Did the no chapters thing put you off at all?
Only... it didn't. It was... You know, when it jumped from section to section, you know, sometimes you immediately knew you were in a whole other section with different characters. At the most, it would take a line or two. I did not have any problem with that, other than there were parts as I said earlier, when I didn't know if the university and the assassins and the auditors, I had a hard time differentiating them because I didn't know if it was something that I hadn't caught and they were maybe the same people. So that really had nothing to do with the writing. It was just me trying to pick up as many clues as I could.
Yeah, and I think maybe the print version helps because there's definitely a much harder break from section to section than you might get in the digitals.
Absolutely, because there really is, there's very little. It's you know, if something ends on line 3, then it maybe picks up on line 5 or 6. So there really is...
Read an e-version.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's when you're reading it, it's easy to know when you're in different sections. That wasn't a problem.
Okay, that's good to hear. I know because some ebook versions are not very good about footnote placement. Sometimes they'll just say, yeah, go to the back of the book.
Oh, God.
That's... And well, I you hate know what that it, on an e-version.
It did have, although, and I clicked on one once by accident. It had little asterisk notations. On my Nook, the actual handheld Nook, I didn't quite understand what that was, but when I was reading the Nook app on my computer, it was, you know, it was red and I could click on it, and it just threw me to the end to see what all the footnotes were. But then after that, I couldn't figure out how to get back to whatever page I was on, which kind of sucked.
I think you have to hit the same asterisk.
Okay, because at one point I didn't know what page I was on.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure how ebook versions play well with footnotes, and Terry Pratchett loves his footnotes.
This Most of the time, the answer is terrible, by the way.
I only looked at one, and I started reading it and went, you know what? You don't really need to know this.
Oh, but the footnotes are so much fun.
Maybe I'll go back and I can read them later as a whole separate adventure. But... considering I finished the book at 6:30 tonight,
yeah.
Had I gone through all the footnotes, I wouldn't have been done.
It's all good.
But I absolutely enjoyed it. It was not difficult to read. I absolutely recommend it. And a friend of mine who is of the British persuasion, when she saw my Goodreads post, she, you know, very excitedly said that she every Christmas she reads it, and she gets all excited to read it at Christmas.
All right, so who is this book for?
Everyone.
Yeah. But I think you need to have a little bit of kid at heart in you, I think, to more fully enjoy it.
I can agree with that sentiment. I mean, it's definitely one of those books where, you know, you have to have a more childlike sense of wonderment and humor to really fully appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But I think anyone can just pick up and read it and have some fun with it.
Yes.
Which is great. And, you know, Terry Pratchett, I mean, he's the master of writing books for just about anyone. Every book has a unique theme, and you'll always find something
mm-hmm.
that'll interest you. And with Hogfather, I mean, he's playing on one of, you know, the world's most favorite holidays. And it's one where the most, I would say, outside of maybe Halloween, has the most level of childlike wonderment. I mean, I'm more of a Halloween fan myself, but...
Now I'm trying to think if this book was written with a Halloween spin, if I would have liked it as much.
If this was Nightmare Before Christmas?
I don't know.
Probably would have liked it less, actually.
Yeah.
Because the Christmas spin is really what makes this book a lot of fun. Being able to pick out all your favorite childhood movies and stories. I mean, he does it a lot.
And so many riffs on Christmas carols.
I mean, I suppose one of the only downsides is it. I mean, if you're not as familiar with some of the references, then yeah, they're going to go over your head. But I don't feel like that's any excuse not to pick up the book and read it still.
No, because I'm sure I missed a lot of references, but it didn't diminish any part of me enjoying the book. Because sometimes if I read something that I didn't quite understand, I would just say, It's probably a British thing. And just continue reading.
Yeah, that's usually what I do.
And that is how you read a lot of British humor.
Exactly.
This is how you read a lot of British humor is genre fiction. Because you just go through the third Hitchhiker's book and you go, this is probably something very British. Moving along.
And once in a while you'll get something that's very British and I'll be very pleased with myself, but the rest goes over my head and I'm okay with that. At some point later, I'll find out what it means, but right now I'm just enjoying the book.
It's also worth noting that Terry Pratchett loves footnotes so much, there is a website where he has gone through and done annotations on every single one of his books to maybe point out a few in-jokes or whenever he sneaks in Cockney rhyming slang.
So he Scottifies his book?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Awesome. Well, except my Cockney rhyming slang is pretty weak, so... I very seldom venture into slipping that into my reference pools. Although I will refer to things as being a bit ginger beer.
What does that mean?
Cockney rhyming slang.
Oh, is that like the rhyming thing, ginger beer queer?
Yeah.
See?
You say the thing that it rhymes with instead of the thing.
Yes. And I don't remember where I saw that on TV, but I did see it somewhere. I remember that from some British TV show of some sort. Yay, I got something British. So pleased. Takes a little to please me sometimes.
You probably do better than I would with British references. I find a lot of them still go over my head.
Alright, so final thoughts on the book, and then Sam and I can talk about the TV version for a little bit.
I have not seen that yet. Final thoughts. It was a fun read, a good read. I liked especially the scene in the mall, the childlike wonderment of, but it's also kind of insane, but there's still, you know, the childlike amazement of them seeing what they don't know. But even, you know, a lot of them were like, they knew it was, they didn't know it was death, but they knew something was kind of not right.
Well, and at the same time, you have this interesting back and forth where the guy who owns the mall is upset with death for giving away toys rather than having the parents buy them. And the parents are upset because the free toys they are getting are, in fact, what the children want rather than what they want for the children. So they've got this little girl running around with a sword. It's like, that's very dangerous. It's like, that is like, the point.
Okay.
It is a sword.
And Albert is like, but you can't... Okay, now it's wooden. And the other girl who's going to go home and find a pony in her bedroom.
Just
because
a small pony.
It would be too messy to have the pony, the horse, in the kitchen.
Yes.
Like, serves them right.
Oh, ponies.
But I actually do have... I think it's the correct movie version in my Netflix queue. I was hoping to have enough time to watch it before tonight, but did not happen.
I guess while you're perusing, I'll give my last thoughts. And it's like, okay, so I do make a point of reading this every Christmas. And if you hadn't noticed, I do like quoting death with the big, deep voice. At one point, Sam, in a rather fevered state, forced me to promise to read these aloud to our children with funny voices.
Oh, I like that.
Which I guess I'm taking fairly seriously as promises go.
As you should.
Yes. Well, and so I sat down to reread this for the show about a week ago, and I just, you know, threw it in the bag, read it on the bus, and then I had a 3-hour break on a split shift, and I was just like, okay, I will, settle into ye olde coffee shop over there and read for a bit, and then I'll go, you know, like, hit the bank and maybe browse around for something to do for an hour or two. And then, well, I sat down in the old coffee shop and finished the book. So I burned through about 100 pages an hour. And this is the third read. It is still that just enrapturing.
I could see me doing that. I could see reading it more than once, thoroughly enjoying it each time, and not not, you know, skipping or glomming over sections, just literally sitting there and enjoying every page all over again. And probably getting more out of it in future reads.
Well, especially if you had a time to come back with more Discworld reading having been done.
Yes.
Because this one kind of goes out of its way to have cameos from more and more characters. Just because it is like the Christmas get-together, so you have the Beggars Guild with, you know, Duckman and Foul Ron and the other one.
Yeah. There were, and I'm assuming they're in the footnotes, but the, like the old duck and whatever the...
Oh, the Soul Cake Duck?
Soul Cake Duck, I have no idea what that is.
Oh yeah, that is absolutely not explained. I think if you've read Lords and Ladies, you get the idea that the Soul Cake Duck is just the Easter Bunny.
Well, because there are chocolate eggs, so that much you get out of it, but I didn't know if that was made up or if that was actually some kind of old British thing.
Nope, just one of his, like, there's usually some sort of Discworld equivalent to whatever real-world thing that you could name.
Yeah.
Alright, so Sam, you want to talk about the movie real quick, or the TV special?
Sure.
Is it the one from 2007?
There's only the one, really.
Oh, okay. Then I do have it in my Netflix queue, which...
It's worth watching.
I do want to see it.
Yeah, so a while back, Sky won a British cable station, got the rights to start doing Terry Pratchett Discworld specials, and so the second one they did was Hogfather, where they put... And they did it, you know, in a two parts. I think they aired 2 hours a night over a weekend. And it was... Well, it was really fun. Like, they got a lot of really good actors to do it, despite not getting Christopher Lee back to voice Death, despite having voiced Death the three prior times.
Oh, that's why you constantly mention that.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I mean, I could even not knowing the reference, I can certainly see why anyone and everyone would want Christopher Lee to voice Death. I didn't know that was why. I thought it was just a personal preference.
No. They did animated versions of Soul Music and Weird Sisters, where Death was voiced by Christopher Lee, and then when they did the live action Color of Magic, they got Christopher Lee back again.
And you know what's funny? As I read it, and it probably is primarily because you talk about it so much, that was the voice in my head.
Well, there's a very short list of people whose voices would match the description of two tombstones slamming together. And that's more than anything I want to say about the Hogfather special is, damn, they got good actors for every role. Especially Taya Taime.
I was actually very fond of who they picked for Susan. I thought she did an amazing job.
I can't wait.
She had so much snark. She did such a good job of portraying Susan's snarkiness. And I love the kids that they picked to, you know, be her little friends, I guess, if you want to
her
put
charges,
it that way.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so funny. It's a really good adaptation. It does a great job of going through the novels. And I loved it. I did. I loved it so much.
And they do manage to get a lot of the fun stuff in. Like, they go to Beers, the monster bar. And that's a great scene. Even if you don't get, like, bits with Jack Frost in it, it still hits all the big stuff. I freaking teared up when they did the little Match Girl scene in the movie.
Oh, it was so good.
So good.
I'm probably going to have to watch it this weekend now.
Okay.
I'm dying to see it now.
As you should. It's amazing.
And I will let you know my thoughts.
All right, so anything else to say before we call this a night?
Read it.
No. Read it. Maybe a quick shout out to our next book, which we will be recording, by the time this comes out, we'll be done.
Yeah, but a month from now.
A month from now, we will be recording Phoenix Rising, which is the first book, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel by Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris.
Yay, Pip.
I love Pip.
I'm looking forward to reading this. I have not read steampunk ever.
Oh, this should be interesting.
There's also Smut.
Smut's good.
That's right. And Pip writes good Smut.
See, this is why we have to do, like, an interview. This is why we have to try extra hard to get Sam on for the interview. Just so I can finally say, so, Pip, remember that conversation you had on Twitter about how you write good Smut? This is the person who started that. Meet Sam.
Oh, she always leaves me nice messages on Goodreads when I write about her books. She's very nice, but she's very active in the GR community, so, I mean, I guess that every time I've read one of her books, she's always like, I'm so happy you liked it!
And you know what? I think once I responded to something on Twitter, she asked for help in saying something in Italian, and myself and someone else I don't know both, you know, gave her a quick answer, and you know, oh, thank you so much! I'm like, wow.
You're the cutest thing ever.
Oh my gosh! You and Sam, I'll bottle you. You're adorable.
Indeed. I don't know if you want bottled Sam. That could be a bad idea.
There'll be holes in the top.
Okay. Just checking.
I'm not that evil.
Alright. And remember, suggest things.
Yes.
Apparently some people are upset with our selections and how geeky they are. You should prove them wrong by picking even geekier books.
I can do that.
You know what? The more a book confuses Lena, the geekier it is.
Yes. And we're not totally opposed to graphic novels either, so if you want to hear us... I'm not sure if we're going to have any special rules for that other than, like, one volume that stands alone. Probably not Watchmen.
Please don't do Watchmen.
Is it not a standalone, or is it not?
It is!
Sam doesn't like it.
I am probably the only person in the world who doesn't like it.
I think...
I am in a minority.
I'm trying to remember. I do think... I may have a note on my phone, but I think it was recommended to me by some of the backseat producer dudes. But they told me, like, there's one specific one that would be a good one to read.
I'm not going to lie. Every time I've tried to read The Watchmen, I have fallen asleep during it. So that should tell you how little patience I have for it.
Understood.
That's usually how you can tell if I get through a movie. If I fall asleep, it was a bad movie. No matter how many times... I actually would like to see that.
It was fantastic.
That being said, I didn't fall asleep during the Hogfather TV movie, so you probably won't either. Go watch it.
And I'm still looking forward to the Unseen Academicals TV movie when that finally comes out.
Is that one of the other books?
Yes, that's about football rivalries.
Oh. Footy!
And it also introduces my new favorite Unseen University faculty member, Professor Hiss, who is head of postmortem communications, because you can't put necromancy on the letterhead. He is required by contract to be kind of evil.
Nice.
Just kind of.
Kind of. A little bit.
Not too evil.
Just slightly annoying, a little uncomfortable.
But yeah, gonna call that a night. Catch you next time.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit backseatproducers.com for more shows, join the discussion, and make suggestions for books on goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.